Everybody, and welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm a giant ball sack, steel ball sack. I'm a giant steel ball sack.
There you go.
I screwed it up. I even have it written down.
All the good it did you.
Yep. Giant steel ball sack. I'm a giant ball sack.
I mean, I think you're a punishment that you have to keep saying it over and over again for screwing up the line in the first place. Yeah.
Take five. Hi, I'm a giant steel ball sack.
We have a special room we put Jack in, and he just has to like.
Exactly. We finally found the aberration. Like, he broke out. This is what they do. Instead of sending them to war, they send them to podcasts. That's really like the dead end that they send people down.
Oh my God. That's reminds me of Conan's podcast. He had, I'm blanking on her name, but she's a very successful comedian right now. And she was like, oh, I'm not doing a podcast yet. I don't have to do that yet. And then Conan's like, yeah, you're right. You have years before you don't have anything else to do but do a podcast. And it was really funny about how basically once a comedian's like past their prime, then they do a podcast.
But I guess there's the thing of like, it's sort of like this idea of like, if you know you made it if you guest on podcasts, but you don't make your own. Yeah, you know, right? Like, I have the time to appear on other podcasts, but I can't possibly muster up the time and the effort to do my own because I'm just so busy involved in other projects.
I'm making so much money in other avenues. I don't need your podcast. Now I'm not making any money. It's 5 years later. I'm going to do a podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Then you're Joe Rogan.
I was on some TV show.
Anywho, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a new episode of Westworld, and it was a genre-bending trip. For our good friend Aaron Paul doing some of the best acting of his career, changing all the different genres.
And then
we got Ciroc's backstory. So there was a lot to chew on in this episode and talk about. What did you guys think? Hot take.
It's interesting because like I saw some of the reception before I watched the episode. It seems like people were pretty lukewarm on this episode, ranging to like slightly cold. So I went in being like, okay, I guess I'm, you know, I've been enjoying season three so far. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm going to be prepared to sort of have a bucket of cold water thrown on me. And I will say, I think from like a structural perspective, it was one of the weirdest episodes I've seen, considering that it's like a flashback. It alternates between a flashback and a drug trip.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a newer form of storytelling than we're used to seeing on Westworld. That being said, I didn't outright hate it. I think that there was some really interesting stuff in there. I think they were able to show a new side of their creativity.
Yeah.
With the genre stuff, even if it was just like small pastiches and less so about like incorporating visual styles into it. I found the Ciroc flashback was an interesting placement. I'm sure we can get into that. I would say this was like, if this had to be a table setting episode, which it looked like from a script perspective, it had to be coming from episode four.
Yeah.
This was an interesting way to do it, in my opinion.
It was. And I'm assuming we all watched the little featurette after the episode. So it definitely seemed like Jonah, as they were calling Jonathan Nolan, wanted to just do this thing and do all these different genres. And they came up with this technique to kind of be able to do it, which is cool. But I can agree that It did kind of throw the pacing of the episode, where they wanted to have this awesome car chase that I think was really well done, but then going to the drug trip kind of killed the pacing of the car chase, which was this really action packed event that if they didn't have Caleb's genre bending, I think it would have maybe been more, I don't know, more impactful from that story side. And then to your point, I thought the Ciroc backstory was really interesting and I really enjoyed it, but it did make it weird then going to the, you know, Caleb and back and forth and all the different scenarios. So while I also have to back them up for taking chances and going for it. And there's also a tinge where even it was like the black and white at first, I was like, ooh, Watchmen did it. Where, you know, and I don't think it was probably like two ideas in their own separate vacuums that got there at the same time. But it was lessened, I think, because Watchmen did it so well in episode six, I think, of Watchmen. But anyway, Jack looks like he has a thought. I'm talking long here.
I'll be the lone guy here. I loved it. I thought it was great. Anytime you can work the theme from Love Story into any show, that's a win-win for me. So I thought it was great. I loved it. It was so sci-fi. Mm. It just, to me, it had that sci-fi feel. There was so much going on. I hear what you guys are saying about, you know, Caleb's trip, but I enjoyed it. I thought, because Aaron Paul was doing a fantastic job with it. And I just, I love the episode. Was it as good as the one before? No. But was it a huge drop off for me? No. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I don't think either Mike or I hate it by any means, but no. I think it was definitely the lesser. I give him kudos for taking a big swing, but it wasn't a home run. It was like a single, infield single, I think.
It also didn't help that it felt like sort of two different story concepts in one episode. Like, I do wonder if they had done what they did with Kitsuya last season, where they just had an entire episode about the Sorok brothers and introduced this idea of, like, I mean, I guess the whole idea of, like, you know, this reveal of what they did with the quote-unquote aberrations, the people that they felt didn't fit in, were sort of the mentally ill, for lack of a better term, and how they sort of sent them to war. I guess that sort of helps tie into the Caleb stuff. And I would say, you know, while this was a table-setting episode, I think probably the biggest reveal of this, or at least we're sort of unraveling the thread a bit on Caleb, where we talked about this in our premiere podcast, but, like, this is interesting to see, like, the example of an everyman outside of the park. And it turns out that, no, he is not the everyman in this, like, caste system of the society that 2058 is, or 2059 is. Like, he is the bottom of the bottom because he is a little bit different than everybody else. And, you know, they hinted towards a few things. The dad from Veronica Mars is going to show up at some point, apparently. So that was the beginning of something that I feel like is going to be probably one of the bigger mysteries. We talked about this last week of, like, okay, now that all the Doloreses have been revealed, what's going to be the big mystery of the back half of season three? And I would imagine it's going to be this.
Yeah, like that. And then with Liam dying, and he's like, you did it, you did it. And I'm like, oh, so did he kill his best friend?
He said, you're the worst
of the bunch. Yeah, exactly. You're the worst of the bunch. And then as he was dying, he said, you did it. So I was like, oh, did he kill his friend? Because they're kind of interspersing him trying to save Liam and his friend.
Yeah, it could easily be a thing of, like, you know, much like with the host in the park, of, like, the memories aren't your own. You know, when he was getting his treatment, how much, like, is that strawberry milkshake story with his mom even real? You know, and I guess the breadcrumbs were there. You talked about this, Jack, in episode one, about how, you know, his mother seemed to have her own mental health issues, and it would sort of make sense, whether by nature or by nurture, for him to sort of be a byproduct of that. So it'll be interesting to sort of find out, you know, who he is, because I think that's sort of, you know, who he's, this is going to set him, I think, on a new path and maybe diverge a bit from Dolores when he really was in lockstep with her up to this point.
I will say where they did blow it is when they went to the beach and they were doing all movie themes. It should have been Warriors. Warriors come out to play. And then had Joe Walsh in the city when they were coming. Because to me, my first thought was, oh, it's the Warriors returning back to Coney Island.
Yeah.
But no, I just think that would have been excellent.
So to your point, but I think maybe to tie both your feelings, Jack, and Mike's feelings, maybe if they had 10 episodes this season, they could have fully committed to the genre drug thing, and you could have had your Warriors scene, had time for it. And then you could have had the standalone Sorok episode where you could have really explored it, because I think there was a lot there to unpack. So on
but
one,
do we need, but we do, but maybe they don't want to give us too much of Sorok right now.
I get it. I totally get it. But I'm not saying it's a bad thing that there's only 8 episodes, because I've really enjoyed the pacing of the season up to this episode so far. But I think maybe like one more episode would have given them time to fully flesh out both ideas.
Instead of feeling like, you know, obviously they were charting it out as to like the plots and the reveals, and they said, okay, I guess we need an episode to just sort of put the two of them together. And for me, it was a little less like peanut butter and chocolate than maybe some of the other storylines that they had. There was like a final connector of Caleb, but like you said, like the Sorok brother backstory was just so interesting, where obviously we have heard Sorok wax profound about why he created Solomon or Rehoboam or whatever you want to call this modern day system. But like, now you get to see the actual development of it. You get to see Liam Dempsey Sr.'s yep. involvement. You get, and you get to see specifically, you know, why Ciroc's brother is out of the picture yep. at the moment.
And Liam's dad's out of the picture too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm intrigued to know, like, if Ciroc's brother is dead or if he's just like in that institution, that, you know, the glass cubicle walls that we found him in. And near
I don't think he's dead.
No, but I don't think he's going to be involved in the story. I look at him as like the Kennedy daughter, where, you know, they lobotomized her, and then he just doesn't. There's no effect, like a modern day lobotomy or whatever. What he's doing to these people, if he's like editing their genetic code, like that to me seems like a modern day lobotomy.
Well, he was trying to save him, right? He was trying to.
No, I think just stop him from being this, you know, chaos agent to his system.
Yeah, and now you can understand why something like Dolores is so scary. This idea of like a grain of sand in a microchip. I mean, the way he talks about the system is so fatalistic. One of the reasons why he kills Liam Sr. is because he says like the scenarios that my brother imagined was the human race getting destroyed every time you ratted us out. So it's clear that he's like walking a tightrope each and every day, that it's not just like, oh, I'll let this machine run. It's like, well, the human race could be extinct at any moment. So it makes sense, sort of like the stakes that he's working with. And it also introduces, you know, I now we can officially say, I think, and especially given the preview for next episode, that I think we know sort of what William's role might be in the immediate future, because you could imagine, I would not be surprised if like he was sent to one of these facilities for this like re-education, and possibly maybe not sent to the front lines because of his age, but definitely I think maybe put away in a corner, or maybe modified to try to work out what they're accusing him of having.
Yeah, I think that's a really good kind of hot take. Mike's hot take there on that one. That totally makes sense. But I love also, you mentioned like the grain of salt in a computer chip, but I think like a grain of salt in, you know, a fine watch, you know, it's just like, all these mechanical movements. So I loved that his kind of Rehobrim thing was on his watch face. And I love the kind of connection there where, you know, a automatic watch has all of these movements. And if one little thing's out of sync, the watch, it loses time or doesn't work at all. So I love that it was like a watch on his wrist. And as he kind of, as you saw it kind of breaking, and it was just kind of getting skewed, and all the eclipse or whatever was getting worse. It was very Heroes-esque. That's the only thing I'll kind of maybe grab on it a little bit.
A little bit from the, like, I feel like the credits, at least in the first couple seasons, like, wasn't there like eclipse imagery there as well? So it all makes sense. And I mean, it incorporates this idea of, you know, when Ciroc's talking to Liam Sr., this idea of like, he's like, well, you know what I'm going to do. You know, the program. He's like, no, everyone always has a little bit of free space where they can improvise. And I find it so interesting because earlier on in the episode, I believe they referred to Dolores as a free space. So I can imagine, again, the freer behind that of like this one moment of quote unquote freedom that people have from the Rehobrim system, Dolores is that personified.
Yeah.
And so to have to like work around that, to feel like they have to do it to save the human race, and to have Dolores challenge that to your face is a really interesting way to leave things.
Well, and I
Do you think Dolores was right to give everyone free will and let them know what their real life was about and all that stuff? Because they didn't all, no one seemed happy.
Well, that's why I think Ciroc is a compelling foil to Dolores here. And again, I think we've always like, is Dolores a good guy or a bad guy? We don't know. It kind of goes back and forth. So I do like that we're continuing that. But I also like, you know, a bad guy, quote unquote, a protagonist, whatever, antagonist, that has a reason behind what they're doing that actually kind of makes sense. It's like Thanos in Avengers was like, okay, he's a madman, wants to kill half of the world, but it's like, this is what the world needs, I guess. Like, I'm not saying I want that, but it's like, it kind of, the madman makes a little bit of sense, I guess, versus just doing it for doing its sake. And that's where in this, I like getting Ciroc's backstory. It was like, I don't think he's right, but he at least makes sense that he saw his home get blown away And I think it's something we can all kind of see in today's environment where the world seems to be kind of in one of these phases of human history where we kind of just self-implode a bit. And if someone could fix that, but what is the cost of fixing that? And I think that's interesting.
You had Caleb telling Liam the rat story about how when he was over there, they had the rats. So he seemed like he was on board for releasing, you know, the information. But once he saw the results of the information, it's almost like his attitude changed. Like, all right, maybe this wasn't a good idea.
What? Yeah, I mean, this happens a lot with like characters being like, you know, I think it specifically comes with a lot of like revenge tales of like, oh, I'm excited to get revenge on this person. Then once you do, you feel like there's a sense of hollowness there that you don't necessarily feel vindication. And I wonder if that was the case for Caleb. And that's why, you know, when Liam bleeds out, he is like so supportive. Even if Liam's telling him to leave, he's like, no, I'm staying. And maybe it's because he's seeing other people in Liam, but at the same time, maybe he's just sort of realizing that like the pursuit that he was after all this time of like, I want everyone to be treated the way that I did is not a good feeling, considering that, I mean, we might have only experienced like a drop in the bucket with like some rioting going on. You know, I really do wonder, and this calls back to like Mr. Robot end of season one, not to spoil too much, but I wonder in the next three episodes, like how much of the world are we going to see in chaos because of the reveal of these files?
There's never a lot of people. So it's,
that's true.
I think we saw what, you know, the handful of people that was chaos. But I think Caleb, what he was trying to do with Liam was keep him alive because he wanted more information that Liam had. He goes, who am I? Mm-hmm. He was even saying that. So, you know, and you had he was having flashes, but it was like, I don't think he knows who he is. And I think that goes directly what his mom said in the first episode. I don't know who you are. Well, because he doesn't even know who he is.
Right. And it's sort of this idea, and that's what the rat story was related to. Mm. What he essentially was inferring to Liam was like, you know, I think people on the whole would rather, you know, die quickly and, you know, with full knowledge of their fate rather than having to swim around painfully until their muscles give out the false image of hope. And I think maybe he's realizing like, oh, you know what? Hope is an okay cage. You know, it's this idea of like, maybe when you bust out of your cage, you realize that, maybe the cage was good. Maybe I like sort of living in blissful ignorance because a lot of these people definitely seem to. And I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think if there are any other human characters who like, I guess William, maybe? I'm trying to think of any other, you know, human characters who would like, have their reputation ruined or like have their life affected by their files being revealed. But that's already sort of happened with the Man in Black, right? That was happening with like Emily finding his card and finding out about all the stuff he did in the park. Everyone else is a host or Ciroc that we know of right now.
Yeah, true. That is true. Because I think, William's the only one. It's safe for Ciroc. And even then, Ciroc's not very human, even though
we also just opened his files. Speaking of Ciroc, can I bring up something? Because don't know if this is in an email, but I've seen this in a couple of articles. This has been a theory that's been thrown about, and I feel like this episode invalidates it, but I do want to put it out there just for discussion.
Yeah.
I saw something about how, you know, when they were talking about Rehoboam a few episodes ago, they were saying that, like, essentially what Rehoboam does is almost like build a carbon copy of our world inside the system to simulate what's going to happen. And something that I personally heard, and this I think ties back, I forget, we had someone last week say that Ciroc might not be like in our world, right? Or was that something
else? He was an AI.
Yeah, so this one isn't necessarily that he's like an AI, it's more so that the scenes we saw of Ciroc happen in Rehoboam, that he's sort of like Ford in the cradle, that like his spirit lives in there. And so anything we see him interacting with is actually not in our world, it's in that world. That being said, that muddies a little bit in this episode when we see him directly interact with Dolores, unless he's like speaking to her from Rehoboam.
He could, because it was a projection, right? He wasn't really there.
No, I think he wasn't there.
With Dolores,
no.
Right. And that's the thing as well, is that people were saying like, well, he hasn't really appeared in person in any scenes. You know, he's almost always been a hologram.
He was with the president.
Yeah, the stuff with Maeve could be in Rehoboam. That could also have been like a flashback too. You know, maybe maybe Serac died, and then you know, his spirit lives in Rehoboam. We can't be sure. I think there was also some fun stuff with that. Was it like the Portuguese president with him swatting flies, which has always been a fun image.
Yes, it was Brazil. So they speak Portuguese in Brazil. Oh, that's what Brazilian it was, president.
But I wrote down because the flies didn't seem to bother Serac. But they were bothering the president. So
like
we've seen that before with the host. The hosts don't seem to be bothered by the fly.
Yeah, they said that they couldn't kill a fly, and that was the big thing, was that, you know,
right.
Dolores showed the first signs.
These flies were everywhere, but not on Serac.
Lots of callbacks between, like, when we flash back to, you know, Serac and his brother experiencing that tragedy, like, he has that shot of his hand going over the grass in the field, like Maeve did. Yep. During her flashback, somebody pointed out, I think it was Vanity Fair, that like the shot of them on the hill is the same as, very similar, when Bernard finds the cow in the season premiere. So like, I guess we have to look into some connectors between Serac and these other characters, because now that we know it firmly is Serac versus Dolores, I guess the other big question is like, what side is Bernard going to take now?
Yep. Yeah, I love the gladiator walking through the wheat field shot. It's an oldie but a goodie.
I guess it represents like what, like golden days of yore, like innocence. Mm.
Yep. I guess like that's one of my, is that on my bucket list? I need to like walk through a wheat field and just run my fingers through the wheat. I haven't done that yet. I've lived 35 years. I have not.
I'm sure there is so much like pollen on the wheat.
Yeah,
just don't touch your face afterwards.
Do you want a sand pillow at the inn?
Yeah, right.
He has a sand pillow to hold his head up.
That's an SNL sketch right there. Just the, it's an actual like Claritin commercial or something, like one in three, and it's like.
Exactly. Maybe that's another reason why Serac is not human. He would have sneezed to be in his hands through that wheat.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I guess one thing I've loved about this season is how, I guess all the seasons have been very connected into the real world, but this one very much so, and it makes sense since they are outside of Westworld or the park. And like even just Serac's backstory and his motivation ties really, like it hits really close to home. And I know we've debated like, are the masks CGI added later, but if it's there or not, like the all of the themes in this season, and
there were more masks last night.
There was, and I looked really close to see if it would be CGI, but I don't know, I can't tell. But anyway, I don't know where I was going with that, other than I think it was just a really interesting dynamic to this episode. It was just,
well, I think that there, I mean, I feel like there are some. It's weird, I feel like it's a bit of apples and oranges comparing like our current situation to Serac's pursuits, but I feel like there is sort of some similar ideas in sort of like using statistics to sort of mold human behavior in a way. I mean, we have all been, I think, properly espousing this idea of like flattening the curve for the past month or so, right? This idea of like, hey, we need to do things right now to produce better outcomes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do not think it's a far distance between what statisticians and medical professionals have sort of been charting out for us in terms of scenarios that can come from the coronavirus over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, to sort of what Serac and his brother were able to chart out. Theirs was just more sort of focused on, like, you know, bigger events and how to manipulate things in their present to cause said events, which also, you know, really brings into mind this idea of like constricted free will, that there were like several outcomes, but like you could do things in the moment. Like this whole thing with the first thing they did with the stock market, right? It was like, you can determine if you want the market to finish up or down, depending on what we can do right now with these $5 million that we stole from you.
Mm-hmm. And they find the exact right thing to do to kind of connect to, Liam Senior's motivations. But I think maybe it is a bit of real life treading into science fiction a little bit, or at least like dystopic future world. I think that is leading to some more impact, or a greater impact to this season versus maybe some other ones. But anyway. All right, let's see. What other thoughts about this episode Caleb, we did talk about
should we talk about the drug trip itself? Because I want to hear from Jack, like, what was it about the specific, I guess, the style of the drug trip that you really enjoyed, besides just the movie references?
Or was it?
Well, you had the music reference. I like the magic bullet was fun because he's like, ah, boom, and he shoots the bullet. And he goes, oh, don't worry. Dolores goes, don't worry. But, yeah, I just enjoyed it. I just thought it was, it like I said, it worked because we knew that Liam had the drug, remember, because he was given to it at the party.
Yep.
Right. So it wasn't like out of the blue, this just happened. But I set just it up. Enjoyed yeah. it. I just thought it was, you know, and I thought Aaron Paul did a great job with
he
it.
He did.
So I just enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know what to say.
You gotta get more than that. I just enjoyed it. Come on.
Well, give us some more details here. I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the whole.
So it was the love story theme alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Across the finish line.
Well, you had.
Yeah, let me read through the ones because I looked on like Vanity Fair and I think Insider came up with a list of these. So we start with Black and White, and it's clear that the genre is film noir. You know, with like the smoky jazz music, and obviously. That's the other thing as well. Like, it's interesting that they started in black and white, but like, I felt like maybe this is just me not necessarily paying attention that much to the cinematography. Like, I didn't see that many other changes. Like, maybe there was a softer focus on Dolores during the love stuff, but there wasn't that much more stuff they did as extreme as the black and white.
No, the black and white was the most extreme, but there was other visual changes. Like the love one was very like blurry and
the next one they do is during the chase. You have what was it,
Ride of the Valkyries,
which is most infamously used in Apocalypse Now, which is
fantastic.
Yeah, which is about, you know, it's an adaptation of Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. This idea of like one guy's innocence being tarnished as he heads more into like this dangerous jungle makes a lot of sense. You mentioned the love story theme, which also might be, you know, maybe it's a foreshadower because, spoiler alert for love story, the girl in the relationship dies in the end. And it's also this idea of, you know, love means never having to say you're sorry, which I feel like is like Dolores's thing, right? Like, no apologies, take no prisoners. We
it's
got
true.
When,
but we
when,
did
when,
have a Dolores die today. In all fairness, we did have a Dolores die.
That's true. One down, many more to go. And I do fear for Dolores because I think Ciroc said in one of his flashbacks, like, the best laid plans fall apart, and it's like, oh, that does not portend well. But then after the love stuff, we got, as Caleb was walking through the station, we got a song from Trainspotting, which is that big Danny Boyle film with Ewan McGregor that focuses obviously around drug addicts, sort of this idea of like making choices. I seem to recall there's like a big monologue from Ewan McGregor to start it off about like, you choose to do this, you choose to do that. Like, thank God I have heroin. Then of course, beautiful string quartet version of Space Oddity from David Bowie. That feel like
that,
it's just
that,
been used.
That was excellent.
Yeah. I feel like that's just been used in a lot of stuff.
It has.
The online articles I've read have sort of, caught that to like not being the final genre because they said, you know, like the fifth act, whatever the character Marshawn Lynch played. And they said it was sort of like a false alarm of him being like, no, this is reality. And then we finish with, I know that we unfortunately did not get our Warriors reference, but as we go to the beach, we do get a pertinent song from The Shining.
Yes.
Which makes a lot of sense given, again, sort of like Caleb's, I guess, previous unstable mental nature, and maybe he'll come around to become that Jack Torrance once again.
And that score, that those themes from The Shining are so amazing. That with like Stanley Kubrick's like big like gimbal camera shots from a helicopter, like it's perfect. But there's also an Iggy Pop song in there at one point, if I remember correctly. I think that was one of the ones he did with Josh Homme.
And I think they ended with this song Emerge by Fisher Spooner, which I don't think has any pertinence. It was just sort of like a way to end as they step onto like their newly stolen jet, assumingly now maybe they're sort of done with the LA chapter of things and ready to move on to other stuff.
Before we move on from this conversation, can we just talk about how cool Ciroc's jets are with the freaking like panoramic
window
view?
Yeah, that would
view.
Be cool, wouldn't it?
Like, I've never aspired to, like, insane wealth because I feel like it brings a lot of problems. But in that moment, I was like, you know what? I know these don't exist yet, but I'm sure Jeff Bezos has one of these, and that'd be really cool to have.
I was really intrigued that, like, it almost, the background almost looked fake. So it made me wonder, like, oh, was this, you know, is this just bad CGI, or was this, like, was this a setting he chose? And, like, could he choose, like, a forest? That he, or, like, could he choose that he's flying on the beach?
Yeah, that's a good point. So if Afterlife eventually becomes just, like, a hard drive we could put on, then I'm calling it right now. I want whatever Ciroc's airplane thingy to be in my hard drive to Afterlife.
And it's also perfectly themed, because, again, they said when they wanted to do 2059 of, like, okay, let's make things pretty similar, but, like, a little bit different. And we got that with, like, even the jet had, like, a slightly different shape, you know, than the jets we have now.
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Even the cars are mostly all glass, too.
Yeah. And they automatically stop when there are Amber Alerts.
Yes. Which, again, would make sense. And even Colin's like, this would be so cool. It's like, well, Google and Uber and all these companies are trying. This is their goal. This is what they want to have. Unfortunately, AI has just not been able to adapt to a human being yet.
Yeah. And we should also say RIP Dolores' trusty motorcycle.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking.
Gone too soon.
Hopefully she has a few more in her pocket. I don't know.
What if it was only that one? She could only take control of that one motorcycle.
It did its job, though.
Well, I'm sure Maeve will bring in like 100 more motorcycles. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. But yeah, that was a tough one. Much like...
You guys surprised to see the return of Lena Waithe and Marshawn Lynch / like, do you think this is a wrap for them?
I think this is a wrap for them. I expected them to come back at some point.
I was shocked to see him. And then I'm not shocked that when they left, I think that has to be it.
I think so too. I think so too. But it was a neat story arc for them. Marshawn Lynch is, you know, amazing. and Lena Waithe, she's a fantastic actor. So,
and she had her own sort of moment of revenge too, right? Where Liam is sort of going on his like last, just sort of like at the end of his rope, you know, mm-hmm. yelling at them about like, you are all a drag on the system. Yep. You know, the system is in the prison. You are to all of us, essentially being like, you're the one. This is why we can't have nice things. you don't have a choice. And then she shoots him. Which I think, you know, he might have saw coming that like he was going to die anyway. What did you think about this episode as a send off for? Because I mean, both Liams end up dying in this episode, but this is a, you know, as Dolores said, like she's sort of done with Liam. She had to use his access to get into the system, and then basically after that, he was just sort of on.
Well, they had his money, so they didn't need him anymore.
That's what he said. He's like, "You have my money, you have my identity. Like, there's nothing left," and they understood that point too.
Yeah, I don't think necessarily Dolores wanted that, but didn't really care. He's kind of dead weight at that point, so. Lena Waithe's character. What was her name in the show? But anyway, she took care of
Ash, I think.
Ash, that sounds about right. She took care of business, and I think that's that. To me, I didn't really care so much because he was kind of a lame, not lame character, but lame person in this show where it's like, you kind of suck, so bye. I'm fine.
Yeah, I guess he bears a lot of resemblance to his father in that regard, right? And sort of like the parallel ways they went out of like, they got involved in something that they are in way over their head.
Yeah.
And they think it's like they appeal to their own personal senses without realizing just like how big the picture was that they were playing a hand in, and they were used and abused and discarded.
Exactly. Yep. In both cases, and I thought that was really apropos or poetic for the two of them. But also like a fitting journey for the two of them, because all they had was money, but really they weren't the brains behind the operation. So I was cool with both of them being killed. Not that that makes me a sociopath, but I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I had no issues with it. Except that Liam had information, but we didn't get because he died too soon.
Yeah, but Dolores also has access to the system.
Yeah, she has it all anyway.
But is Dolores going to share it with Caleb? Is she going to?
Well, I think that could easily be a thing down the line where Caleb gets the information behind Dolores' back. Because let's remember, like, according to him, she showed him everything, right? She was the one to first introduce him to the file and be like, this is what they wanted you to do. I'm sure she was withholding information from him to manipulate him into helping her.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I think... That, and I can we just talk about how the little eyes with her all scanning the information was just a really neat visual effect.
Yeah, I did like that the flashbacks ended with, like, that final scene and it panning out to almost make us believe that essentially, like, the file was just, like, all the flashbacks mm-hmm. that she was watching. I also loved the image because we usually see, like, one of our transition shots is usually, like, Rehoboam mm-hmm. and then, like, a spike will pop up somewhere and then we go to that place.
Yep.
But for the flashbacks, it turned three-dimensional. Or turn into like a tunnel mm-hmm. of circles. And I love that idea because it's literally adding another dimension to the story in taking us back in time through various previous instances of it. It's a really cool effect.
And it's kind of a play on Apple's Time Machine, which again, their backup service. But like the way it works is you kind of go through this tunnel and there's mirrored images all the way like back, just like the way they did to Rehoboam. And showing and going back to this other like data file. So I thought that was a neat little play. And you could see again where they're taking 2020 and putting it 30 years in the future, 40 years in the future and seeing what's there. I think that's a really good play. Same way that, you know, Zemeckis did with Back to the Future going 30 right. years in the future. And it's like, there were some things he got right, some things absolutely not, but, you know, not going too extreme and not... doing anything future, Jetsons is way too extreme, but kind of getting that in between is probably the right place, and I think they've done a really good job of picking what actually kind of makes sense 30, 40 years from now, and I think they've done a really good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts on this episode before
we get to listen to feedback? Were we happy that Stubbs is alive? Still can't fight.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think he just needs to show up as purely a number, right? Like they just had to. We should probably talk about the fact that, like you mentioned before, Jay, R.I.P. You know, Connell's Dolores, but he goes out kamikaze style mm-hmm. by blowing up part of the Insight building, mm-hmm. which I don't know if we'll see like the effects news wise, but I'd be intrigued to see like how the world reacts to that moment and why Dolores felt like that was the move to make to be so destructive in that moment.
Well, it seemed like she took out a lot of Serac's kind of right-hand people.
Even Serac freaked out because he turned. I mean, though he wasn't there, but he...
But yeah, I think because that woman, she was the one that was kind of like directing Liam what to do. So I think taking that crew out... That was a lot of like Serac's most trusted people, and then showing that he didn't know that was Dolores until like maybe even after it or whatever. But I think that was a really cool play on her part, and that Dolores finished her purpose and kind of moved on.
Yeah, so that's like officially, you know, we're done with that Pearl, that version of Dolores. I think Connell's even said, like, my role is done.
Yep.
You're the only one who can't be replicated, which I think is very interesting for Bernard. That shows that, you know, we are definitely not dealing with multiple versions of Bernard. There is only one.
Yes, 100%. I'm glad you brought that up. I think... and then we saw it, too. We saw, like, Bernard's was kind of like silver with a little bit of red, and then all the other ones were the same. So that's the only Bernard... There's no Bernard-old twisty ties there, but maybe that's just trying to throw us off. Maybe there's like seven other Bernards in the closet.
But I think, you know, the actual move itself, I mean, the whole Bernard and Connell stuff was another like sort of like disconnected thing, but that was sort of interesting on its own where they sort of had to have Bernard find out a bit more about what Dolores is trying to do. And you mm-hmm. see Bernard also try to reason with Connell's a bit as well of like, you know, you are her, but like there must be another bit of another person in you. Like you must not be completely on board with this. Mm-hmm. And I think he was preaching in deaf ears, but I think that Caleb is somebody who might get that. I also want to bring up briefly that moment where Dolores takes several bullets for Caleb.
Yes.
So I guess is our assumption now that whole routine at the end of the premiere where she's bleeding out and Caleb finds her, was that a con? Was she purposely making herself weak so that Caleb would find her? And because it seems like she's someone who is totally fine.
It didn't faze her. She just zipped up her jacket.
Exactly. But that's compared that to when she got shot like once back in the end of episode one and she's like on death's door.
Well, I think we talked about it too because she recovered so fast. Remember when we said, well, maybe mm-hmm. Caleb gave her some kind of... but she jumped up like she was on the brink of death. And then she jumps up and she takes care of the two bad cops. He was picking them up and all that different stuff. So yeah, it might have been just a, you know, a, something to get Caleb to feel sorry for and bring him in.
I agree, but I do think you could play it that I didn't think it was one shot she had in the, like, she took out like all those people and was getting shot left and right. I feel like from my eyes, I thought she had took on a lot more damage in episode one versus it was just three shots.
But she still recovered fast.
You're right. You're right. I do think it's your thoughts are valid, and I do think warrants kind of backing up that theory, but I could also see it as, to me, this was less of a wound than maybe she took at the beginning of the season.
There was three bullet holes.
there were three, but she took on all those hitmen at the end, and they were all shooting her. She was taking those hits, so I feel like there's a certain level of, like, but I agree. I do agree, but I'm just saying there's a, you yeah. could...
Because like she wasn't
away.
She wasn't even wearing a bulletproof vest, right? Because Caleb saw
The exit wound on the side, which didn't hit him, which was interesting because it looked like she stood in front of him and it was right there. But whatever,
deflects out the other way. But Caleb has to know that she's not human now.
I would think, or having a lot of bionic parts. Who's
now? Yeah, something like that. Which you know, again, like he has his own complications with artificial technology, considering that he worked alongside one. So I think. Yep. You know, Caleb has to reconcile with a lot immediately during this long plane ride to wherever they're going. And so I think he's going to be the character to watch for the immediate future as to, like, who does he remember himself as? Who is he really? How does he come to terms with, you know, his closest confidant and what she's trying to do? And ultimately, does he betray Dolores or not? Does he become another Teddy? Or does he become his own Dolores in his own right and sort of strike out against his master?
If you were... go ahead, Jack, sorry.
We didn't mention either, too, that Dolores Martin kind of saved Bernard.
Right? Absolutely saved.
Yeah, so why... If Bernard is going to work against Dolores, why would she...
that, though. She said that at the beginning of the season. She wants someone to kind of counter this, to probably hold back her inhibitions and make sure she doesn't go too extreme in her...
Exactly.
Wiping out of society. But I do really like I do really like Mike's point here, and I want to ask I forgot what I was going to ask. Jack threw me off there.
It was a great point, though.
Thank you.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, exactly. It was a good point. Damn it. Anyway, I guess we
can why don't you write it down?
Because I didn't. I don't know.
Works every time.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways... we'll close it off there. I'm sure I might think of it once we get to listener feedback or Jack's crackpot theory of the week. But anyway, you guys ready for some listener feedback?
Oh yeah.
All right, that's what we thought about this episode. Now it's time to get on what you thought about this episode. Oh wait, no, sorry. Wait, it was about Caleb betraying Dolores.
Mm.
Doing it or not doing it, and is he actually going to betray her? Is he going to et tu brute Dolores in the end? I'm kind of wanted to ask the panel here: do we think that's going to happen? If you were in the writers' room, if you had a sphere of influence to kind of tell them what to do, oh, am I taking your crackbook theory? I'm sorry, but
that's it. It's down the drain.
Sorry, guys, you're coming with a new one. Think on your feet.
Wait. Let's put a pin in it. And okay. Let's be respectful and wait until the end of the show. We'll give us some time to sort of think it over.
And then you guys can comment on it after.
There we go.
Sure. Fine. Thank you. Let's go to some listener feedback. But before we do that, we're gonna take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. Time to get into what you all thought about this episode.
You all got it?
First up, we do not have an email from Ethan. So,
ooh.
Ethan, I don't. Whatever excuse you have, I don't care. Send an email.
I think he said he just doesn't like you, so he said he's not sending an email.
That's fine, because, you know, we have one from not Ethan, and his emails are frankly better, so...
And we you can tell Ethan, like, if you know, if he does want to build a bridge with Jay, this is not helping the situation. just furthering the rivalry.
Are you saying eventually if Ethan keeps slacking, you won't read an email if he does send it?
Yeah, I'll leave that. Just ask not Ethan. I'll leave it there for 2 years. Just saying. All right, let's go to our email here. First up, we're going to go to not Ethan's email. Previously on emails from not Ethan. Mitch did an admirable job trying to tie Star Wars into Westworld, while not Jack took us on a tangent about how Last Jedi branches out into something that new that Rise of Skywalker doesn't. To not Jack, I feel you in what you appreciate about Last Jedi doing something different. I can see value in that. My response, though, is that episode 8 of 9 of one single saga is not the place to do that. Go do that experiment in a spinoff or a brand new trilogy. For me, 9 was a thrilling conclusion where we got to go on an adventure with our characters. Gone are the meta commentaries on relativism and society, and instead we go back to the fun of struggling heroes who have no business winning the day, rising up and taking down evil. The brilliance of the movie is that while on its surface, it's a fun ride, it's also managed to make relevant and necessary both episode 7 and 8, while hearkening back to the themes and motifs from both the original and prequel trilogy. Anyway, I'm glad you liked what you liked. But for me, I'm drawn to the epic and emotional journey of Rise of Skywalker. Gave me all of that, especially for Rey and her choosing that despite her bloodline and the darkness within her, she could embrace the light, unlike all the characters in Westworld.
Okay, all right, fine. I'm glad the word Westworld was said at some point.
Because that was my crackpot theory. It's all about Star Wars.
I'm sorry to the listeners of this show that I have influenced on Ethan to go this Star Wars heavy. We have a great Star Wars podcast on this network, Owen and Bruce Barbecue. Check it out. But anyway, these people seem to always choose a dark path whenever they are presented options. But the connection this season to Big Data is very interesting and prescient. I'm intrigued by this idea, and what did Dempsey see, and who did he think Caleb is? For your crackpot theory, Jack, I say that Caleb is also Bernard. Until next week, folks, love from the original flavor, not Ethan.
So what, is Caleb like a backup Bernard? Like they say that there's only one Bernard, but in case that Bernard dies, there's another one handy?
I guess, but then it does kind of, I don't know, make the whole statement a moot point that he's the only one left. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have to think when this coming from a version of Dolores that it might be a manipulation, but yeah, I don't know. And it would be interesting if, you know, this is just like, there was a Caleb, but the person right now is not Caleb. You know, that this is an entirely different person who is just implanted with the memories of this guy. Hell, maybe this Caleb, maybe the actual Caleb, like, died in battle. And Dolores, sort of like how she, you know, adopted this personality, Lana was the ID that she adopted in the first episode of like a girl who died in Sweden or something. Maybe she did the same thing with Caleb of like, yeah, here's a guy who is not alive anymore. I'm going to use his identity but you don't have to imagine like, you know, when before they met, he was like working in the Rico app, he had a job. So this would have to be like a deep con if they were indeed setting up Caleb as an entirely new identity.
Yeah, that's where I feel it's a bit of a stretch, Armstrong, to say. But I think it'd be interesting, but we'll see. Yeah, stretch Armstrong. But anyway.
Hours of fun.
No, it's like maybe.
Lots of goo inside, much like the hosts.
Yeah.
We all cut open our stretch Armstrongs, right, at some point?
I never had one. Little known fact. You can see my room. My room is full of my childhood. At no point is there a Stretch Armstrong included.
Did you ask for a Stretch Armstrong?
I did. Christmas 94.
Oh, he got the year and everything.
I thought you asked for a Tupitera Terra shoot.
That was when I was 3, Mother Trucker. That was 1988.
And the best thing is we guessed it right.
It doesn't matter.
Ninja Turtle parachute.
It was 1988. not 1994 Christmas, when a young 9-year-old Jay Glatfelter woke up Christmas morning.
Let's face facts. You with a Stretch Armstrong, that's work. That's exercise.
There was no Stretch Armstrong.
9-year-old Jay was not going to be exercised with Stretch Armstrong. It's like, you got.
I never thought that Stretch Armstrong. This Stretch Armstrong is what you're thinking, like, is a kid's resistance band? Is that what you're calling Stretch Armstrong? Get that arm workout in.
It was too much work for Jay. Jay wouldn't have done it.
Jack's just trying to justify his failure.
We got him a Ninja Turtle skateboard that he never used. And we got it. I think I saved it more than you.
That skateboard is worth a lot of money now. And I sold it at a garage sale at Grandma Clanton's house in 1995 or 6, somewhere on there.
I don't know. Remember, she offered Pepsi for breakfast with the donuts.
Anyway, okay. Get back on track. That's my job.
And your Ninja Turtle hockey game that you never used.
I did use it. I just lost a lot of pieces. Those I'd like to find. One of those would be neat. Anyway, focus, people. We have one more email here titled Westworld Episode 3.05 Genre. Hello, Jay, Jack, and Mike. Or do you prefer Mitch?
I do not prefer Mitch. Just going to answer that question right off the bat.
Hi, Sasha Flick here. I am a hardcore OG Lost podcast fan. Hashtag LA Lost Finale Orpheum 2010. And also a fan of your Leftovers podcast. And of course, this terrific Westworld podcast. So thank you, and thank you each. Sasha, thank you. That was very kind of you to say.
Thank you.
While Mike was not in the Jay and Jackiverse in 2010, if you were, you would have been at the Orpheum Theater in downtown LA with that fantastic fun Lost party that we had. All right. So while I am late to this pod party, I'm caught up on all the episodes, both on show and on pod. So a select handful of episode hot takes before an expanded list for episode 5. Episode 1.
Which is hot takes.
Dolores' convertible dress is less of a James Bond fashion gadget and more of a purposeful distracting. Given her history, she knows that most are just going to look at her body and see her only as the girl in the gorgeous gold dress. The overhead shot of Caleb walking up is the same as the overhead shots of Maeve and Dolores waking up in Westworld. Hashtag Jack is onto something. And last for episode 1, I agree with Jack's crackpot theory here. Out of the gate, as I had the same thought, Caleb is definitely some type of AI, if not an outright host type. And while his cabbage-headed mom even knows it, that he's not her son, Caleb just doesn't know it yet. And many episodes to date point us to the idea of hosts not knowing their hosts, Sizemore, Hector, Bernard, etc. Episode 2, The Winter Line. Do you think it was tongue-in-cheek that Luke Hemsworth swings about a battle axe as a nod to Chris swinging Thor's hammer? Maeve and Serac's first meeting is like a showdown in the Garden of Eden, with Serac literally carving up an apple, symbolically carving up truth and wisdom. Episode 3, The Absence of Field. Episode 4, The Mother of Exiles. In this modern era of representing true selves and giving all gender identities visibility between Dolores, Charlotte, Caleb, Musashi, Ash, and any number of who might it be, this sleek and sexy casting is working on every level. Hashtag we are all Dolores. Episode 5. Genre. As the teenage Serac brothers descend to the bucolic hill, the French village we see in the distance has the steep point of a chapel, a pinprick of a reminder of that previous Westworld.
Escalante.
The apocalyptic newsreel opening to tonight's episode is especially on the nose given the current climate. We didn't talk about that today. Use of sound and music during Caleb's genre trip was impeccably done, from the Ride of the Valkyries for the action genre to Love Story for the romantic genre to Nightclubbin' for the drug/party genre to the Shining theme for the murderous dystopia under the pier. Red Rum! The scene where Serac is tending to his brother in the facility is like if Kanye West was the creative director for a future musicalist for Rocky Horror Picture Show, where Serac is Frankenfurter and his outlier brother is Rocky.
Oh my God, that is just an image and a half.
Yes,
and I love it that now exists.
Thank you for that journey, Sasha. Here we go again. It's a Garden of Eden story. Dolores has given everyone the bite of the knowledge apple, seeds and all. Everyone is aware. No one is asleep. Eden is over.
But that also means that they've been given original sin then, in that case. And yes. So they can all be punished, in a manner of speaking, in that their god, as Serac referred to many, many times, is Rehoboam.
Yep, it's very true. Who is the Messiah? Is Dolores the Messiah? Is Kayla the Messiah? Is Bernard the Messiah?
Well, I guess like Dolores was sort of like the snake in that, but it wasn't that it was convincing Eve to bite the apple. It was more so like forcing the apple down Eve's throat and then making her sort of realizing it.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess Bernard is sort of the one that is still sort of like he's already come to terms with his quote unquote sins that he's committed before, so he's sort of a few steps ahead of the stages that humanity is at this point.
And I'm not sure of the full Judeo-Christian, you know, story or methodology here, but is the Messiah's purpose to kind of absolve original sins? So I don't know if that's the case. I know that's what Jesus did, but I don't know if like that's what is Bernard going to do here. The original, I don't know. There's a lot of ways you go about that. I'm not a theologist though, so
I mean, I'll be very intrigued to see like. Let's say Dolores' plan is foiled, which we might get into in Jack's Crab Talk Theory, and, like, the humanity is saved. Like, can they ever go back to the way things were before, though? When they were living without, like, knowledge of what Rehoboam had planned for them. Like, humanity is definitely changed, no matter what the outcome is, because people are now going to live moving forward with, like, okay, this could be a possible outcome as to, like, when I die, how I die, and what happens in my life between then.
Well, I do find it fascinating that this show, since the beginning, has explored the flaws of humanity, and it's given this, you know, the hosts are this alternate take, an alternate vision of, you know, what humanity could be, or what's maybe the next evolution or next step in humanity. And, you know, that's why I love Serac's trying to fix humanity or all the flaws of humanity, but in doing that, it's like, are they actually living humans the way they're supposed to be? So it's a great philosophical debate that this season's presenting, which I think has made it a really compelling season so far. Let's finish it up here. The Insight logo bears a visual similarity to the Westworld game app. I haven't played that. Game map. In the most hashtag COVID-like quote of the episode, Bernard says about Dolores, she's sending them off their loops. This is what COVID has done to the entire world. We are all off our loops, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it from here. Thanks for what you guys do. Maybe a Zoom session for a finale episode. Hugs, Sasha. Sasha.
Thank you, Sasha. That's an awesome email.
I don't think we need Ethan anymore.
I think Sasha's the new Ethan.
Yeah, I think so.
We're crowning Sasha the best around. And Sasha, we usually do a live episode for the finale on our page. We'll post links if you are on a Facebook group or wherever.
That's only Twitter 3 weeks away.
Only, yeah.
I know. Crazy. That's crazy.
Only 3 episodes left. All right.
I forgot to say last night's episode, I didn't want it to end. That's how much I was enjoying it. I looked, I go, oh, there's only 5 minutes left. I go, Anyway. I always judge that as a great episode is when sometimes you're like going, all right, this thing can end. I'm good. I've got enough information. But I just enjoyed last night's episode.
For me, it was I was like, I didn't want it to end. I didn't have that. But I didn't like at no point look at my watch and when is this gonna be over? So that's where I think it's a very medium.
Well, you have that clock above your TV, so you don't need to look at your watch.
I guess you're right, but I didn't really think about it. I don't watch it right when it starts at 9. It's like maybe 9:10 by the time we get to it or whatever. But anyway, to me, it's very medium. I didn't say like, okay, when's this gonna end? It was more like, okay, that was fun. That wasn't a waste of my time. I didn't say that. So, but I like that, you know, we're three people and we have three different opinions.
Did you like it or not?
I did, but I didn't love it. I liked it. Yeah. I didn't love it.
Okay. I have no problem with that. I'm not here because I know there's people that don't even like season three.
Well, I don't think any of us like season 5. It hasn't happened yet.
No. Well, I've seen the future, and it's fantastic.
Oh, good. That was the outcome?
Yeah, I thought it was just amazing.
Jack is Rehobam.
I'm the god.
Anyway, all right, well, that's what our listeners thought about this episode. Now it's time to get into Jack's current font thing of the week, in which I almost spoiled it, but we do this over
stream. It's pretty well spoiled. I mean, it's just like
No.
I'm rehashing things we talked about, but that's okay.
We record this episode through StreamYard, even though it's not like streaming or anything. So we get to see Jack's reaction and all of his like.
Yeah, he was basically trying to signal to us to not talk about certain things, even though we had no idea what he was signaling about.
My house is on fire!
Yeah, exactly. Like, I thought when you were shushing me, you were like, oh, don't talk about Love Story, because, like, it's a spoiler. Not, don't talk about Love Story, because it's involved in my theory of the week. And I didn't want you to ruin it for me, dude.
So the feedback for you, Jack, is we need some type of like set sign signals so we know like
exactly.
There's like touchdown or like this bad pass or whatever. Like we just need some standardization of your hand signals so we know when we're spoiling your crackpot theory.
Exactly. Or like a safety word. Okay, there we go. Jack has a sign just for Jay and I. I think we can use that from now on.
All right. Got it.
The sign
also,
said,
I could also say it's very applicable. Jay could use it with Ethan as well.
It could, Ethan. Critiques. Ethan, you son of a bee sting. If anyone wants to know what Jack wrote, it was shut the F Frank up.
I wrote it out.
He wrote it out.
Wrote it out.
All caps. Like a text from grandpa. And you're like, are you yelling? It's like, no, I'm just writing it so I can see it better. I'm like, oh, grandpa. Sorry. All right, moving on.
Now we're picking on old people.
Oh, that's right. You're a grandpa. Sorry.
Yes, I am.
All right. Anyways, let's go to Jack's crackpot theory of the week. Take it away, Jack.
So do we believe that I was going to say Aaron Paul. Do we believe that Caleb was locked up at one point and being reprogrammed or rebooted?
Yes, because I believe one of the flashes we saw was him wearing goggles that look very similar to what William's wearing next week.
Right.
In a straight jacket, looked like he was in some sort of like table. So yes, I would imagine that he has at least some past of being institutionalized at some point.
And somehow he escaped, or was he allowed to escape? I'm going to say he was allowed to escape.
Ooh.
And that he is set. His job is to terminate Dolores, and that's why we were getting Love Story, because as you mentioned, Mike, in Love Story, Allie McGraw, she dies. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. She dies, and he keeps looking at her, and because that's what the one thing I can remember from Love Story is she dies.
Yep.
You don't remember the Love Story part. I just remember, oh, they're in love and she dies.
Yep.
So I think that he's going to attempt to kill her. But I don't know if he'll succeed, but I think that's what the whole thing was, that he's, who am I? Who am I trying to, because he's trying to remember who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think once he does remember, then he's going to try and kill her.
I do agree that I think he is going to turn on her, because I don't know. I think this season is going to end with like Dolores being defeated in some way, because I mean, she really hasn't had like a huge setback outside of Teddy killing himself. Like even at the end of season two, when we thought like, oh man, she got gunned down at the forge. Like she's dead now. Nope. She was actually inside Charlotte Hale. Like she was fine. Don't worry. She hasn't really experienced, especially this season, like any sort of defeat. And how great would it be that the one person who ends up sort of stopping her plans is this person who's considered like an aberration of the human world, this person who exists outside in sort of the free space of humanity is the only person that can stop Dolores from being able to take over, you know, to get people out of their loops.
And I think Serac knows about Caleb, because I think probably, so we saw he visited his brother and was working on it. So I think he probably has all kinds of Calebs all over the place.
Mm. Interesting. I like the idea. I'm not 100% against it, but I do think there's something to be said that why have Maeve, or why is Serac trying to court Maeve if he, but maybe Caleb's the contingency plan, to your point.
Well, yeah. you see, Dolores is always seems one step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mike was saying, she hasn't suffered. I mean, she's almost she's like Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some guy, you know, some person in a movie where that you just can't kill them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come back for the next movie and the next movie, and you know, James Bond.
And that's the thing as well. And actually, I remember us talking about this a bit with Eleven from Stranger Things, of like, from a creative perspective, if you have an all-powerful character, at a certain point, there's nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm,
if right. that character has no challenge and has no vulnerabilities and yep. no weaknesses, and that's why season one in particular was so much fun, was watching Dolores sort of come into her own and grow as this character.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I would not see what a season 4 or 5 would be if Dolores does not get challenged here. Granted, you know, this show surprises us time and time again, but I just feel like she has a reckoning coming at yep. some point. And I guess the question is, does it come at the hands of Caleb or Bernard or somebody else?
And that's the beauty of what Damon Lindelof did with his season of Watchmen, where you take a godlike character like Dr. Manhattan, who is essentially like a Superman-esque or Captain Atom character, where he's like infallible, can't die, but then like give him or make them more human to the point where they can fall. So
or he doesn't kill Dolores, he kills Charlotte Dolores.
It could be a thing where like he ends up exterminating the other Dolores clones,
right?
So she's the only one left,
and that weakens her. So
yeah,
because I mean, they talked about in this episode that like, you know, she has lived all this almost sense of immortality, and that she mm-hmm. has died so many times, and this yep. would be the first time, and like her life is truly, you know, one shot in the pan.
Yeah, she does say, I think she did say, I can die.
Yeah.
I think she does use that line. So, mm-hmm.
but apparently she can't get shot.
No.
So you have to try something else, Caleb.
All right. So that is your crackpot theory.
And I'm sticking to it.
All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of Westworld with J. Jack and Mike. Give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time except for Ethan.
And send an email to westworldjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup. If you use Amazon, use our link, jandjack.com/Amazon. And we want to thank the people that make this show possible, especially our patrons like Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, Ed the Creepy Mailman, and Greg the Gray. Thank you to all of our patrons. You can find a full list over at jandjack.com. Mike, you are one of the most prolific podcasters I have ever met in my 15 years of podcasting. Where can people find your fantastic stuff?
At a Mike Bloom type on Twitter and Instagram is where I put out most of my stuff. Parade.com is where I put out interviews for reality shows. Working on stuff on Rob has a podcast and post show recaps. The big one big thing that I actually just worked on, I don't know if either one of you are Schitt's Creek fans, but I just Schitt's concluded Creek. This past week, and I got to do a nice little series recap of that. And yeah, that's one of my favorite comedies, let alone like favorite shows that yes. I've experienced in years.
Colleen and I are
on my list.
Colleen and I are safe, or at least she's been wanting to like do it week, like every single week, but I've been like, nah, I just want to save it because I'm not ready to say goodbye yet, so I'm just gonna maybe.
It's tough. There's a lot of happy tears going on.
I want to say that when there's a time that I'm not busy and I can watch it.
It's really good, and what I love about the show is I don't know. It hits on so many levels where you don't care about these people; they're very annoying, but then just like you fall in love with them on such like an emotional level that.
Oh, so you've seen it.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen the last season. I've watched up to the last season. Last season.
I've never seen that episode, but people get, yeah, I gotta watch it. You gotta see the baby.
You do, though. I mean, that's the thing is that I'll admit I watched the first episode one time, and I'm like, all right, this is fine, but I don't know if I want to commit to this. It takes a little while to warm up to them, but once you'll hit a certain point when you're like, wow, I love this show. And Jay's completely right.
Maybe I'll start tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's on a different, similar way with this, like Parks and Rec, in terms of like having genuinely comedic moments, but with such emotional investment. in these characters and genuinely heartwarming moments that you would not have expected from this show at first blush. I could not recommend it highly enough. The first five seasons are on American Netflix, and then the sixth season just finished on Pop TV in the United States. So if anything, you can watch the first five seasons before hopefully the sixth shows up sometime soon.
Yeah,
I just finished up my favorite comedy, Ozark. So that was funny.
You will not be disappointed. To Mike's point, it does take a little while. Like most comedies, like great, it takes a minute to like get. But what it does so well, it's a similar premise to maybe Arrested Development, but where Arrested Development, where they're all horrible people and you never really, like this one, where a similar premise to that, but like rich people that lose everything, but you actually really fall in love with all of these characters on a really deep level. Like I cry easy, but I've cried a lot watching Schitt's Creek. And,
but happy tears.
Yes,
like
it's not
a drama where heartbreak occurs. It's more so like these beautiful moments are happening and it makes you genuinely emotional, which is a testament to like very, very good character work. Could not recommend, especially in this time.
Yes.
When we need to sort of transport ourselves to a place where like problems exist, but there is so much like joy coming from a you know, a place on TV, and it like warmed my heart getting to watch for the entire series. And to Jay's point, I envy those that have not explored it and or the final few episodes, just because, you know, you miss it.
I'm putting it on my
list. It's Desmond's was it Great Expectations? Tale of Two Cities. I don't know, whatever Dickens novel he was saving for when he was going to die.
Exactly.
I'm not going to wait till I'm going to die, but I'm just waiting, probably till Netflix, I can just watch it all the way through and just be really emotional through all of it and just deal with it. But anyway. So definitely check it all out on Mike's Twitter page and all those other fun things. Mike. And also, kudos on your self haircut. I don't have the courage yet. I'm getting there. I'm just been wearing.
Honestly,
hats,
just
but...
do it. I'm getting close to Jack here.
You got a little more.
You got plenty of hair. You just
shaved that bright light.
As Sasha spoke about, you know, we're all going a little stir crazy here. I have not gotten a buzz cut in like at least a decade, and I'm like, let me do it. I mean, the two choices during this time are either you let your hair grow to extraordinary lengths or you cut it super short. And see, you know, by the time you're able to go back into society, if it's at a reasonable length, and I elect to do the latter, feels pretty good, I'll admit. So thank you for the compliments, and hopefully you'll be joining that club next week when we get back together to talk more Westworld.
I'll shave my head next week.
The hashtag Mike Bloom hair challenge. It's a thing. Check it out.
It's a thing now.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. We'll see you all next week for episode 6. Only 3 episodes left. Until then,
hasta luego and goodbye.
What?
Bye.
Shut it. All of you. This is my show, damn it. Hasta luego and goodbye.
It's already been said.
That's it. You're on the Ethan list. All of
you. Oh, wow.
No.
Bye.